didn't want Paul to do that because I'm a crier. And I actually wanted to get through some of what I wanted to share with you before I started crying, because once I started, I kind of don't necessarily stop. But thank you, Paul. That is how we know each other. My mother. Oh, dear. Paul asked me just after Easter camp if I would be willing to come and share a little bit of my story with all of you, and I said yes, and then yeah, that will be fine. I want to talk about, and I knew straight away, I want to talk about living a life worthy of our calling. And I've thought about that for the last few months, and surprisingly, the talk didn't get any easier to write, and my story didn't get any easier to write. And so I have a few pieces of paper with a few scribbled stories, and you have to put up with me and my conversational style of talking, because that's all I know how to do. My name is Amy, as has been said. I am 25 years old, and in a week and a half I'll be 26 years old. I study medicine for another 4 weeks, and then I will be a bona fide doctor, so please don't get sick next year. Well, actually, no, get sick here. I'm not going to work here, so please don't come to Darwin and get sick, because I won't really know what I'm doing yet. Wait for a few years and then call me, and we'll see how we go. So living a life worthy of your calling is what I want to talk about, and I actually don't feel like I'm someone that should be talking about that. I feel very humbled to be able to... I'm a crier. I feel very humbled to be able to share with you a little bit about who God is for me and the journey. That we have been on for the last 26 years. I'm going to start at the beginning, and that doesn't mean that you'll be here till 12:30. But I think there are four main movements that God and I have experienced together. And so I want to start. Oh, thank you. Oh, good. Well prepared. I want to start with my childhood. And I promise we won't be here at 12:15. I guess I would say I am someone that has always known God. I've grown up in a Christian household that was not easy to grow up in, not because they were Christians, although maybe that's got something to do with it, but because my house was not always a safe place in my early childhood years. But it has become progressively safer throughout my life. My mother and father loved God and served in their church and loved their... And my mother has been a wonderful... inspiration to me of what it means to love God. Even if the world is not a very nice place for you all of the time. My parents took me to church, and I went to Sunday school, and I learned about Jesus. I learned about the Jesus who lived a life in obedience to God, the Jesus who willingly offered up his life to die on a cross, and in some magical way saved my soul. And that was truth for me, always. I don't even know when I really made the decision to follow Jesus, but I just always knew that I was. And in my childhood, I always spoke to God and he spoke to me, and I felt like he was leading me where I needed to go and protecting me from some of the things that I needed protecting from, and encouraging me in my gifts and my abilities, even though I didn't really know what they were. I mean, I was five. Sorry, I should clean up my face. As a teenager, I was active at school. I studied dance, I studied drama, I studied music. I enjoyed the performing arts, and so I got myself a scholarship to a performing arts school because I was going to be an actress, and I was going to spend my life enjoying the dramatic arts. And I would, even though I haven't gone on and done that, I would still say I spend a lot of time enjoying the dramatic arts, usually through my expression of my life. and in my interactions with my friends. I was a very active teenager, and I was active in my church. I went to youth group, and through that, and lots of youth camps actually, and through that I met a lot of people who were living out their life for God in a way that was meaningful and purposeful for them. At the age of 15, I got very unwell. I was bedridden for a year and suffered from chronic fatigue syndrome, which is a very un-understood, that's very bad English, it's a very misunderstood illness. And as someone that is medical, I still say that I don't really understand what was going on in my body at that point in time, but I knew that there were days where I couldn't get out of bed. There were days where I couldn't dress myself or feed myself. And that was a very humbling time for me because, and for all other purposes, I was a high achiever. I was someone that performed very well at my school, both academically and in my love for the performing arts. And I was a Christian at this point in time still. And at this point in my life where I was 15 and being dressed by my mum, which every 15-year-old girl would love, I began to ask some questions to God. They weren't scary for me to ask, and they probably weren't that controversial. I didn't really ask God why I got chronic fatigue. I just kind of took it as a given that that was what was for me. That fit my theology at the time, that whatever happens to you is God's will, so this must have been God's will for me, which must mean that he has purpose in it. I spent a year sitting on my couch with my laptop, communicating via like Messenger and things like that with my friends, and finding ways that I could pray for them and encourage them in their lives. And I never really asked God why I got chronic fatigue, and I didn't really ask him what his purpose was for it. I just figured that that was what it was and that I would be okay. And I'm really thankful that I didn't ask God the scary questions then, because I don't think that I could have handled the answers. And I don't think I was prepared to really ask him more about why I was suffering or why there is suffering in the world. Ten years on from there, they're the questions that I probably ask most days. I got better somehow. Saw a doctor that believed that there was something wrong with me, and he was actually a Christian, and he prayed for me a lot, which I found really comforting. I found it really comforting that he would care for me both physically and spiritually, because he would pray for my spiritual life as well when I went to see him, which now I've worked out is actually really kind of inappropriate because you're not really allowed to do that with your patients, but I'm really thankful that he did. I finished high school, and kind of from my time from having chronic fatigue, my whole tact about what I wanted to do was beginning to change. I saw a lot of really bad doctors in the times that I was unwell. Well, maybe they were really good doctors, but they were really bad at engaging with me in a way that was meaningful for me and in a way that made me feel like a good or decent person. And so I kind of thought about that a little bit and thought, wow, I think I could do that better, which sounds really arrogant, but it 17, I probably was really arrogant, and I probably still am in some ways, and I thought I could do that better, and so began my journey of trying to get into medical school. I finished high school and I got into uni. It wasn't medical school. I missed out because I've got really bad spatial awareness, and part of the exam to get in is all about fitting shapes into places and turning them around. I don't know. I still don't get it. I still don't see how it's helpful to being a doctor. Really bad spatial awareness. And so I did a year of health sciences where I majored in public health, which is, you know, community-based health. And I kind of thought to myself, this is a waste of my time. This is not what I feel like I should be doing. Because by now I'd really felt like I'd heard from God that I should be a doctor. Don't ask me how I'd heard from God, just like don't ask me how I knew God when I was a child. I just knew, deep down in my toenails, I just knew God. And I knew that he was asking of me to become a doctor. And so after a year, I was bored and kind of frustrated that I wasn't becoming a doctor because I was becoming a health scientist. And so I took myself off to Africa. I woke up in the middle of the night at about 2 a.m. and decided that I was going to live in Africa for a year, and ran upstairs and woke my mum up and said, "Mum, I'm moving to Africa." And she looked at me and said, "We'll talk about it in the morning." It's very polite. And surprisingly, the next morning over breakfast, she goes, "So where are you going in Africa?" You might have met my mother. She's come to East Kent once, maybe 4 years ago. That was my mother's very kind of, it was her supportive way, but it was also her, if I normalise this idea, perhaps she won't go. I went 12 weeks later. I went and lived in Africa, and I went to homeschool for a family who were missionaries over there, and that didn't work out very well. Apparently, I'm not a teacher, and yeah, that really didn't go very well. And so luckily, I'd gone over with their mission, and so I looked for other options that I could do with them. I began working at the hospital that they had in Niger, so that's in central West Africa. If you want to imagine Niger, close your eyes and think of brown dirt. And that's what the scenery is like. And then think of every World Vision ad you've ever seen and make it a little bit worse. Niger is the poorest country in the world, according to the UN. It has 10% arable land. That means that 10% of the land in the country is farmable. It's on the edge of the Sahara, and the Sahara is encroaching, and every second year they have a famine that is so bad that up to a quarter of the population dies. And that population that dies are their children and their women. And working at the hospital there, I saw women and children die every day. From stupid things like diarrhea and starvation. Whilst I was in Niger, I read a book called Blue Light Jazz, and suddenly my faith started to change a little bit. I couldn't sit and look at other people starving and dying and watch mothers make the decision about which child they were going to let starve without asking God some questions. Those questions weren't hard to ask God, actually. They were bloody obvious. It didn't fit with my theology that I had at the time, that everything worked for the purpose and the will of God, because how is that fair? It didn't work with my idea that following Jesus meant that everything would be okay, because it wasn't. It didn't fit with the idea that I had that I could go over there and share the love of Jesus and that these people would be saved from something, because they weren't being saved in their everyday life. And I met incredible people from a wide range of cultural, of language and theological backgrounds. And in amongst all of that mess, I actually saw God. So I sat there asking God where he was, but I could see him, but it didn't make any sense to me because it didn't fit the thinking that I had always known about God. And if that doesn't make sense, that's okay, because it still kind of doesn't to me. And I spent my year there and I cried a lot, and I developed some coping mechanisms, and some of them weren't that great. They were to shut down, to not think about it, to go, well, everyone dies and that's okay, everyone dies. And some people will die earlier than others, And that may or may not be because of the way that I live my life in Australia, but I'm not going to think about that. That's okay. Shut down. Because if I chose to feel, I would have been broken. And at that point in time, I wasn't okay with that. Just like I wasn't okay with that when I had chronic fatigue syndrome, because if I was broken, I had no way of fitting brokenness in with my idea about the world and my idea about who God was. So that was 2009. I came back, I finished my health sciences degree because I still really wanted to get into medicine. And to do that, I then had to have a degree. So I finished health sciences in public health because I saw what happens if you do not have any basic health care. Saw what happens if you don't have immunisations. I saw what happens if you're not educated to know what to eat. I saw what happens if you're not educated about what to do when your child has diarrhoea. I saw what happens when you don't have a basic health care in your pregnancy or no one attending you while you are delivering. I finished health sciences and applied for medical school, and this time I had a good feeling, because I'm always an optimist. Not that it seems that way now, but I am. And I was looking through the list of medical schools to apply to, and I kind of just went down the list and I applied to Adelaide, because that's where I'm from, so I thought, well, that's a good start. And then I applied to some unis over east. And the day before the application was due, I thought, oh, just something within me said, look again. And I was like, oh, I've looked at the list, like, stop being anxious, just apply, put it in the post. But I felt that thing, that feeling of, just look again, Amy. I went, okay, I'll look again. So I looked again, and I found Notre Dame on the list, and I read about Notre Dame's principles, I guess, of provision of education and their principles about why they're creating doctors. And I read about their want to create doctors for areas of need, their integration of theology and ethics. And I thought, wow, that would actually be a really cool place to study. I will apply. And I got this feeling, again, that kind of said, that's where you're going to go. Okay, well, that's where I'm going to go. I better apply. I applied. I got an interview the week before the interview. It wasn't even 6 months, Paul. It was a week. My mother found Paul, or vice versa, on Facebook. The week before I had an interview, or 2 weeks before I had an interview in a city that I'd never been to and didn't know anyone in. That doesn't fit with my theology. That doesn't fit with my understanding about the way God works. And yet, My friendship and my relationship with the Joyous has been profound. That's the only word I can use. Profound. Starting med school was like starting high school all over again, and I didn't enjoy high school the first time. It was challenging academically, probably for the first time in my life. So challenging that I didn't know how to integrate the ideas that were expressed to me, and I didn't know how to study because I'd never really had to do that. And it was like studying in a whole new form. At the time when I moved over here, I was living with Claire and Tyson, and I think I would come home, study for a few hours, and by 8 o'clock I would be asleep because I was so tired. And I was reading books with words that I didn't even understand, trying to make sense of it, going, oh my gosh, like they expect me to learn everything about this in a week. And I'm not exaggerating, they actually expected me to learn everything about the heart in a week, and that was it. And then you could come back to it again like once or twice in 4 years. So that was challenging from a kind of intellectual academic point of view. But I encountered challenges that I never thought that I would. I was a church attender in Adelaide, as I said before, and actually while I was studying health sciences, I also studied a little bit at Table Adelaide, and I got employed by my church in Adelaide to do some of their worship. So I was working for them a couple of days a week as their worship coordinator, pastor, whatever. And I was really involved in the Baptist Union in South Australia, running youth camps that I had attended as a teenager and then decided I really wanted to sow back into. I really wanted to bless the people that had really blessed me in my understanding of God. So I was really involved. Everyone in South Australia, I could work into any church in South Australia and I'd know someone. And they'd know me and we'd have a conversation and it would, you know, I really understood what it was like to be part of a community. And I moved here and I really struggled, to be honest. I really struggled to find young people who kind of encountered Jesus in the way that I encountered Jesus. I really struggled to find people my own age who were prepared to sit with me and listen to the questions that I have. Because I think about my faith and I've had experiences where my understanding and life and faith don't kind of match up. And this culminated in all sorts of things. I went to a church where I was kind of eventually kind of asked not to attend anymore because some of my ideas were a little bit too hard for them to listen to. And that was so hurtful. And it didn't actually cause me to question my faith and my relationship with God. It caused me to question the state of Christianity, where people wouldn't be prepared to actually ask God the questions that he wants us to ask. And I found community in the most bizarre of places, for me anyway. My best friends for the first 2 years of med school were a group of four or five girls who are same-sex attracted. And being a good Baptist, I knew that wasn't okay, and thought, oh, but that's okay, they're really nice, so, you know, it's okay that their choices, you know, lead them away from God. I just can't say that and believe myself anymore. They showed me God in incredible ways. Their love for one another and their love for me and their acceptance of me and their want to journey with me showed me God in a way that I wasn't experiencing in the church and caused me to ask questions. Why do I have this idea that some people are in and some people are out of the kingdom of God if I can see God in them? If I find God in them, surely he is in them. And if God loves me, surely he loves them in the same way that he loves me, the same way that he loves all of us. So I had to do some reframing again of my ideas. And I found that that was a really lonely time. And I knew that God was with me. But he wasn't necessarily always talking to me. And I probably wasn't necessarily always talking to him nicely anyway. I've got a lot of questions, a lot of questions about my faith. But I think that God's okay with that. I also have this deep set thing, that feeling, that I guess I cannot attribute to anything else other than the Holy Spirit within me, that is a deep knowledge of who I am and who God is. And last week we looked at Ephesians 1-3, and it's interesting that we did that because I wanted to look at the beginning part of Ephesians 4, which starts with therefore, which we all know means in light of what I've just said. So in light of the first three chapters of Ephesians, Ephesians 4 starts with therefore. And I'll just read it, because if I paraphrase it, it will be my theology, not what it actually says. So, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, as a prisoner of the Lord, I implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called. With all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit with a bond of peace. For there is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called in hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father who is of all and over all, through all and in all. Growing up, I'd only ever heard that as an implore. Oh no, that's not a word. That's not a real word. I've only ever heard that as a talk about being spiritually pure. I'd only ever heard that as, therefore, be holy. Don't swear. Don't drink. Don't go out dancing. Just be holy, because that's what God wants of you. He wants you to follow His ways, and that means you have to be holy. And I'm not saying that you don't have to be holy. I think that God is changing us into more and more into His likeness. But now when I read to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with humility and gentleness and patience, showing tolerance for one another in love, and to be bound by the unity of the Spirit, which is of peace. There's an element of that which says to me that God's good for me to walk with Him the way that I am. And that the calling to which I have been called is a life lived in knowledge of Him and in recognition of Him in myself and in other people. And I know that I'll probably read this in another 15 years and have something completely different to say about it, and I'm okay with that. And I know that the questions that I ask God will change, and I'm okay with that. Because He has been leading me through all things, in whatever way, for whatever purpose, maybe none at all. Because He's set within me this deep-seated part of Himself that's prepared to walk with me and journey with me, and that I can't imagine life any other way. I always get in trouble for saying that following Jesus ruined my life, and that I'm really angry that I'm a Christian. But following Jesus really ruined my life. And sometimes I am really angry to be a Christian. Sometimes being a Christian is harder than not being a Christian. And not because there's things that I know deep down with that part of myself that I should or shouldn't be doing. But that because it's a challenge. Like, for me, it's a real intellectual challenge because I love thinking about the world. And it's a real emotional challenge because I really feel things with the world that I really think that God has put within me, this real sense of feeling for the sorrow of the world and the brokenness of the world. And that's hard in a very apathetic generation. And it's hard because the word Christian has so many connotations, and I don't always feel like I fit those. But I wouldn't have it any other way, because in the hardness that it is to follow Jesus, there is a fullness and a richness that I cannot find anywhere else. There's a fullness and a richness that I do not think exists anywhere else other than in the heart of God. I want to read to you, if I may, before I finish, because I've been talking for a while, a few quotes that I find helpful. One is from Richard Rohr, and the other is actually someone, I don't know where it's from. That's bad. I don't know where it's from, but it's not me, so don't attribute it to me. Sorry. The first, is by Richard Rohr. So it says, "Give me your broken, disfigured, rejected, and betrayed body, like the one you see on the cross, and I will make life out of it. It is the divine pattern of transformation, and it never seems to change. You will still be confused, but not so confused by your confusion. You will still have anxiety and fear, but will not be so afraid. You will still experience weakness, but not be so weakened by your weakness. And the second, I cannot attribute because I don't know who wrote it, but it's a blessing that I wish that I hadn't been blessed with. So I'm going to bless it to all of you too. The heart that breaks open can hold the whole universe. This goes to the heart of the Christian faith, the cross. It invites us to dare to feel in a world that has gone numb. Jesus invites us into a strange new world where those who mourn are blessed. Living in a culture that says you are blessed if you avoid grief, we are trained to avoid tears in infotainment. We are encouraged to shun our sorrow in shopping, and we run from our grief because it means facing our own powerlessness. Yet this is the strange irony of the cross. We run from the pain that will transform us. Jesus invites us to stop running from from the pain that can transform us and to travel through it. We enter into the darkness, trusting that the love that raised Jesus from the dead will illuminate the darkness. We travel trusting in our tears, spilt over the state of ourselves and our world, that we share in a grief that is our God's. This is the journey and the strange joy of the prophets, entering into the divine ache of a new world and acting in it out of joy. We can only be filled with joy to the depth that we are prepared to feel our own grief. Resurrection means that everything can and will be transformed. And the joy in our tears is the evidence that it started. So dare to feel in a world that's gone numb. Because love has won the resurrection. And I take that on the days that I wish that I was a robot, when I'm faced with people dying in front of me, and I sit with them while they spend their last moments on earth. And I take that and I wish for them that they would know the love that has won. And I have no doubt that God does business in those hours. And I have no doubt that God is calling them unto himself. Because if he's done that for me, of course he'll do that for you. Of course he'll do that for my patients. Of course he'll do that for people whose lives are so beyond even our understanding because we live here. Because love has won in the resurrection. That's me. That's a very messy version of me, but that's me. I hope that from my story you gain some understanding of my walk with God, and I hope that touches something in you in the only mysterious way that God can. I hope that you've got something to take from that. I'm not sure if I had a point, but I hope that you've taken something from that. I'm happy to field any questions that you might have, or to talk more about that later or now. I did talk for too long. Yes, sorry. I'm so excited. I didn't say that last year I spent a year in Broome working with largely an Indigenous population, working at the hospital there and the Aboriginal Medical Service. And I guess I got that feeling deep in my belly of this is something that is good and right for me. This is something that I really enjoy and I'm really passionate about. I'm really passionate about giving value and worth, reminding our First Peoples of their value and their worth, because I think sometimes as a society we haven't done that very well. So I'm excited about my work. I'm actually really excited and optimistic about finding Christian community in Darwin. I've been really blessed this year. I met my friend Caitlin in the Kimberley of all places after I'd been praying for 2 years that God would provide me with a friend around my own age, and I didn't find one in Perth. I met Caitlin in Derby and have been attending her church with her this year, and that's been a really healing thing for me. And I have some really good friends in Darwin from Adelaide that I'm looking forward to having some good, decent chats with, because their theology is a little bit weird too. That's it from me then. Feel free to chat to me more after.
Thank you.